This is VOA News via remote. I'm Tommy McNeil. U.S. President Joe Biden has withdrawn the U.N. sanctions on Iran that had been reimposed by then-President Donald Trump. We get details from AP correspondent Mike Gracia.
The Biden administration has rescinded the restoration of U.N. sanctions on Iran imposed by the Trump administration last September. A letter sent by acting U.S. Ambassador Richard Mills to the U.N. Security Council on behalf of President Joe Biden says the United States hereby withdraws three letters from the Trump administration regarding Iran. The State Department said Thursday the Biden administration wants the U.S. to rejoin the 2015 nuclear agreement that was designed to rein in Iran's nuclear program. The Trump administration pulled the U.S. out of the agreement in 2018, accusing Iran of serious violations. Mike Gracia, Washington.
Congressional Democrats and the Biden administration have unveiled a broad immigration bill that would provide an eight-year pathway to citizenship for 11 million people who are currently living in the country without legal status. The legislation reflects the broad priorities for immigration change that Biden laid out on his first day in office. They include an increase in visas, funding to process asylum applications, and new technology at the southern border. But after decades of failed attempts at passing comprehensive legislation, advocates, lawmakers, and President Joe Biden himself are signaling an openness to a piece-by-piece approach. Again, congressional Democrats and the Biden administration unveiling a broad immigration bill that would provide an eight-year pathway to citizenship for the 11 million people living in the country illegally. This is VOA News. NASA has landed its largest and most sophisticated rover yet on Mars as part of the search for past life on the planet. AP correspondent Tim McGuire.
NASA ground controller Swati Mohan delivered the news to the Perseverance team at NASA's Jet Propulsion Labs in Pasadena, California.
Touchdown confirmed. Yes. Perseverance safely on the surface of Mars.
Later, after the six-wheeled rover had been on the surface for a while, Mohan delivered a key announcement.
Perseverance is alive on the surface of Mars. Congratulations to the mission. Looks like we have some more news in. It looks like we're getting the first image.
Over the next 2 years, Perseverance will use its 7-foot arm to drill down and collect rock samples with possible signs of bygone microscopic life. 3 to 4 dozen samples will be sealed in tubes and set aside to be retrieved by a fetch rover and brought to Earth by another rocket ship as early as 2031. I'm Tim McGuire.
New testing is underway on coronavirus vaccines for pregnant women, while another state reports a case of the South African virus variant. AP correspondent Jackie Quinn.
Pfizer says it's launched a study in 9 countries with women who are volunteering to get its coronavirus vaccine to test the safety and effectiveness on pregnant women who are especially vulnerable to COVID complications. Researchers will check for any reaction in the women and their babies. In Nevada, health officials say the coronavirus variant, first identified in South Africa, has been detected in the state. The patient had traveled. Now experts say people need to keep wearing masks and maintain social distancing because the virus variant spread is growing. This would be the 11th case of the South African variant found in the U.S. I'm Jackie Quinn.
A new UN report says that humans are making Earth a broken and increasingly unlivable planet through climate change, biodiversity loss, and pollution. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres said 2021 is what he called a make-or-break year. Unlike past UN reports that focused on one issue and avoided telling leaders actions to take, Thursday's report combines 3 intertwined environmental crises and tells the world what got to change. It calls for changing what governments tax, how nations value economic input, how power is generated, the way people get around, and the way they fish and farm as what they eat. More at voanews.com. Via remote, I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Morning Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, February 19, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Uganda's army charged 7 soldiers for attacking journalists.
One of the first actions that can be taken for us would be, if found guilty, they would be suspended from the force.
Alleged corruption in Kenya Defense Forces recruitment. Zimbabwe rolls out its COVID-19 vaccine program donated by China. Liberia health authorities say a suspected case of the Ebola virus has proven negative, and Gambia commemorates 56th independence anniversary.
As always, I plead for national unity, reconciliation, and tolerance. The true Gambian nature is marked by warmth, sympathy, generosity, and willingness to support one another.
And coronavirus measures and their impact on indigenous people's rights. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley Sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The military says its disciplinary committee has issued jail sentences for soldiers accused of recently attacking journalists at the UN Human Rights Office. This after Army Chief General David Muhoozi apologized to journalists, saying that the attacks were neither sanctioned nor justified. He also promised that the Army will pay the journalists' medical bills. Robert Sempala, Executive Director of the Human Rights Network of Ugandan Journalists, tells viewers Peter Clotty that his group is calling for new military training to include understanding the critical role of media in promoting democracy.
It is a welcome gesture, and we all pray that the army walks the talk as far as compensations are concerned, but also making sure that these things do not happen, especially where journalists are in a very organized environment, it's not chaotic, they are doing lawful duty. Even when they are covering the opposition, the army should realize that under our setting of a multi-party political dispensation, it is extremely lawful to cover the opposition just as well as we cover the ruling party, the NRM.
The attacks were condemned by all civil society groups, even some government officials, and understand are displeased with it. The army said they will inform the public about the actions it will take against these officers. But what possible actions can be taken against them?
One of the stand actions that can be taken for us would be, if found guilty, they would be suspended from the force. Just like the police act would say, if one of the officers is tried through a competent court with all the jurisdiction and are convicted, certainly they would be expelled from the force. I think the army needs to take these drastic actions of singling out those direct officers and dismissing them from the force. That would serve a good deterrent purpose on the ones that are still in the force too. To make the officers implicated, meet the costs, not using the taxpayers' money because of the recklessness or abuse of power or failure to adhere to the rules of engagement.
So where does violence against journalists in Uganda stand from here? Because some people are saying that if care is not taken, this will continue, because this is not the first time security officers have attacked journalists for doing their jobs. So what happens next?
What happens next now is for us to have a very systematic and clearly organized stakeholders engagement. In here, we need to have the leadership of the security forces, to have some public journalists that have gone through thin and thick to cover stories at in the hands of all this brutality. Then we need the editors, who are the gatekeepers, who deploy the journalists, who oversee the day-to-day running of the newsrooms. At some point, bring in the UN and EU missions in here to come and make sure that whatever we're doing is overseen by a neutral arbiter. And that would serve for me a good purpose to, you know, try to scale down on these
the occurrence of attacks on journalists in the line of duty, but also to have something called national security domesticated, demystified, because there's always that argument of this is national security, national security, and it is an excuse to abuse and violate some of these rights that are supposed to be enjoyed by journalists, even when we're not under tense political time or under a tense political season. We need to have a standard briefs and guidelines on how we can proceed. And these have to be fairly agreed upon. They shouldn't be dictated on to us by the army. And certainly we would not have also the right to dictate to the army, but we need to sit in a more organized setting and agree on the do's and the don'ts. I think that we will scale down on the occurrence of these attacks.
Robert Simpala is the executive director of the Human Rights Network of Ugandan Journalists. He spoke with viewers Peter Clotty from Kampala. Kenya Defense Forces' ongoing recruitment exercise is facing allegations of corruption. Some Kenyan senators say the exercise is corrupt because recruitment officers are demanding kickbacks of between $3,000 to $7,000 for a recruit to be accepted. As Marie Ojiambo reports from Milwaukee, USA, security experts are pointing fingers at some Kenyan politicians for contributing to corrupting the recruitment process.
Just like many other Kenyan government institutions, Kenya's military has been tainted by corruption allegations during the exercise where Kenyans willing to serve in the forces have to pay between $3,000 to $7,000 for one to get a slot in the military, and in this case, the highest bidder takes it all. However, a heated debate by Kenyans on social media has taken the debate to the parliament. Narok Senator Ledama Olekina has called on Committee on National Security and Foreign Relations to come up with an accountable way to carry out the recruitment exercise.
Ensure that the integrity of the recruitment process is not compromised and that there is fair opportunity for all those participating in the recruitment exercise seeking to join the KDF. Further, Mr. Speaker, KDF should identify the rogue officers demanding bribes from job seekers and take appropriate disciplinary measures against them.
In 2015, incredible allegations were made that the Kenya Defense Forces was involved in sugar smuggling from southern Somalia into Kenya to avoid import dues. Bomet Senator Christopher Langat said that most of the officers bribing their way to the military will compromise efforts by the military to serve the country.
We shall end up getting the military personnel who purchased their way to the service. So this corruption will continue. The complaints are everywhere. And in fact, even some people are saying that recruitment takes place 2 months or 3 months before the actual dates. This particular matter has denied rightful Kenyans opportunity to serve their country patriotically.
A Kenyan, Adelaide Akinyi, has tried several times to secure a chance in one of the forces without success. She was eliminated last week from the KDF recruitment that took place in her area with reasons she says are well known to the recruitment officers.
I have tried Kenya Defense Forces 9 times. General Service, I have tried 7 times. Kenya Police, 4 times. Kenya Prison, 3 times. It's just a matter of keep on trying, but it is not easy. What I can say, it's all about money.
Another Kenyan, Oliver Kwej, has already given up on his dreams to join the forces. He says the corruption allegations at the recruitment center is a story of his life.
I qualified for everything. Then the guy who was in charge asked me if I could have some money. He asked for 20,000 shillings so that I can be given the job. So I didn't have the money. So I was told to go until next time. From that time until today, I've not tried.
On the other hand, security expert George Musamali faults the government for not intervening even after complaints were raised by members of the public.
Politicians are the main beneficiary of these kind of happenings during recruitment. KDF has been blamed for taking bribes from the militia and allowing them to cross into the country. And this has become a major security lapse.
The KDF has since refuted claims that the recruitment exercise is marred with corruption and that investigations on those found taking bribes in the exercise is being carried out. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, I am Maureen Ojiambo in Milwaukee, USA.
Zimbabwe rolled out its COVID-19 vaccine program on Thursday, with health workers getting the first of 200,000 doses of the Sinopharm vaccine donated by China. As Columbus Mavunga reports for VOA from Harare, one group is pressing the government to conduct more clinical trials.
Once again, we want to appreciate Honorable Vice President of the Republic of Zimbabwe and the Minister of Health and Child Care.
Officials watched and then clapped after Zimbabwe's Vice President Constantino Chiwenga received his jab of the Sinopharm vaccine. This marked the beginning of Zimbabwe's COVID-19 vaccination program, aiming to reach 10 million citizens and achieve herd immunity. Chiwenga, who doubles as the country's health minister, said Zimbabwe was winning its war against COVID-19, the disease caused by the coronavirus.
The marked decline in new cases of coronavirus is vividly heralding the end of the second wave of the pandemic. Despite the slump, the government of Zimbabwe adopted a second line of defense to augment preventive measures to combat COVID-19. The second layer of defense is the procurement and rollout of COVID-19 vaccines. My ministry conducted all scientific processes to ascertain the efficacy of Sinopharm vaccine, which was confirmed to be 79%. My presence here today with some Minister of Health officials is to exhibit the government's confidence in the Sinopharm vaccine.
Some citizens and rights group question the efficacy of the vaccine and are calling on the government to conduct clinical trials before offering it to the public. On Wednesday, the group Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights said it would take the government to court if authorities do not conduct clinical trials of the Sinopharm vaccine and continue the free and voluntary vaccination program. Just outside where Chiwenga was vaccinated, 42-year-old Quinton Hassan said he doesn't want to hear their legal arguments.
I want to be vaccinated because it's the way forward. Without being vaccinated, we're going to get nowhere in this world here. It's very important to be vaccinated and do not listen to all the rumors about this vaccine. It is not to kill you, it is to protect you.
But he has to wait for long before his turn comes. Zimbabwe has only 200,000 doses of Sinopharm vaccine received on Monday from the Chinese government. On Thursday, Chiwenga said more vaccines would come for all Zimbabweans willing to be inoculated. Columbus Mavungam for VOA News, Harare.
You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, February 19. Liberian health authorities say a suspected case of the Ebola virus has proven negative. Health Minister Wilhelmina Jala says a patient who showed signs of the virus after returning from neighboring Guinea in early February was tested on Thursday, but that the results were negative. Liberia was one of the three West African countries hit hard by the Ebola virus disease in 2014. Early this week, Guinea confirmed a new Ebola outbreak near its border with Liberia. Health Minister Jala tells reporter Moses Gaziewu that Liberia remains on high alert and is ready for any spate over.
The suspected case that was the most talked about information circulating, we ran the test for Ebola and that test was confirmed negative this evening. So therefore making Liberia have no confirmed case of Ebola currently.
How did Liberia in fight get connected to a suspected case of the Ebola virus again?
Guinea, Liberia and Sierra Leone are almost like sisters, and anything that affects one of those countries might affect the other country. This lady came in on the 12th, so prior to anything surfacing, and she was very ill at two facilities. And because she was from that particular area, that information hurting the alert, and so therefore, we are not letting any rumors or alert pass by us. we are going to be testing any suspected or alleged cases that is announced or reported by anyone.
How strong are you with your border surveillance measure?
The borders that are closed, we don't have to worry about them. If anybody come in, they have the regular check. It's like the regular check that we were doing for COVID. You're looking for fever, you're looking for anybody that look ill, making sure that people follow the health protocol in terms of washing their hands and stay a safe distance from others. And we're working with the community at the borderline to be able to recognize any stranger that enter their village. And this is the way how you have to bring the fight to the community by working closely with the borderline community to be able to recognize any stranger or anybody that's ill within their environment.
Are you saying that Liberia has closed borders with the two countries already affected?
Borders were already closed from us for the COVID-19. So Guinea border were closed, Sierra Leone border were closed. So we are just adding to the closure. Nobody has opened their border. So it's not anything that we are doing special. Those borders were already closed, only allowing trucks and goods to cross.
The Ebola pandemic is not a strange phenomenon to you. How prepared are you this time around?
Thanks to our predecessors and all the countries that supported Liberia and educated all the Liberian health staff, today I think we are much better prepared than when it first hit. We have few epidemiologists. We have the National Public Health Institute set up. We have a lot of structures in the counties set up. We have community healthcare workers directly in the community. So we have a lot of expertise. I think every individual in Liberia is an expert because they live through the Ebola and they know what to do.
Liberia's Health Minister Wilhelmina Jala was speaking with reporter Moses Garcia-Wu from the capital, Monrovia. Gambia's President Adamawa Barrow has reaffirmed his government's commitment to protecting Gambia's sovereignty, while at the same time calling for national reconciliation and unity. Speaking Thursday to mark Gambia's 56th independence anniversary, President Barrow also called on citizens to work hard for the development of the country and to stay away from illegal drugs use. Pandere Umbai reports from Raleigh, North Carolina, USA.
Despite the recent spike in coronavirus cases that hasn't stopped Gambia from celebrating its 56th independence anniversary, though it was observed in a low key to avoid the spread of the virus. Addressing a parade in Banjul on Thursday, President Barrow calls for national unity.
As always, I plead for national unity, reconciliation and tolerance. The true Gambian nature is marked by warmth, sympathy, generosity, and willingness to support one another. Let us apply these values wherever we may be.
The president has called on citizens to live by the dictates of the national anthem. He knows that peace and national development can only be achieved provided that Gambians are united.
For the good of all, we need to give a new meaning to national independence through our relationships, interaction, and service to the nation. Within the framework of good governance, speedy development, and peaceful coexistence in a nation and government for all citizens.
Barrow warns citizens to refrain from acts that would destabilize the country.
We have witnessed how partisan politics and conflicts pull people apart and undermine the power and glory of nations, no matter how great they may be. Not even the most powerful are spared of division if the law is not upheld.
Barrow's speech also centered on Gambia's sovereignty. West African troops, ECOMIC, have been in the country since 2016 in a bid to help the Gambia to sail through its transition period post-dictatorship.
Our sovereignty should be measured, therefore, by the extent of our security as a nation, as individuals.
Barrow has reaffirmed his government's commitment to revamp the education sector and fighting COVID-19. Usain Ojabo is the leader of the main opposition United Democratic Party, UDP.
Fellow Gambians, each day we hear the news of our sisters and daughters losing their lives whilst giving life. Each day we hear of our sons and daughters dying in foreign lands, being deported back home unceremoniously, or drowning because they dared to cross the Sahara Desert and the Mediterranean Sea to look for greener pastures. Each day we hear the cries of our mothers, our wives, our sisters, about the high cost of living and the inability to feed their children.
Dabo has also warned against tribal politics. He says a UDP government wouldn't tolerate it.
Tribalism has no place in our society, and we should never allow anyone to use tribalism to draw religious boundaries in our country and communities.
Dabo has called on the government to prioritize the fight against COVID-19. He has announced the postponement of his party's fundraising event. This followed the government's move to suspend all public gatherings amid recent spikes in COVID-19 cases. For VOA Daybreak Africa, this is Pandering by reporting from Raleigh, North Carolina.
It's time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Friday morning to you, Samson.
Good Friday morning to you too, James. We begin the sports with the latest FIFA rankings, where Senegal's national team, the Teranga Lions, maintained their rankings as the continent's number one football nation, according to Thursday's ranking released by the World Football Governing Body. Senegal is followed by Tunisia in second place, Algeria is third, Morocco is fourth, while Nigeria is in fifth position to wrap up Africa top five in that order. The next FIFA Coca-Cola World rankings will be published on April 8th, 2021. Staying with football news, Mamelodi Sundowns will now be traveling to Algeria for their CAF Champions League match against CR Belouizdad after receiving communication from CAF confirming that their match, which was scheduled for Tuesday 23rd of February, has been cancelled due to further medical restrictions in Algeria. The cancellations comes after the Algerian FA requested a postponement due to further medical restrictions in Algeria, whilst Mamelodi Sundowns were preparing for departure to Algeria. Mamelodi Sundowns had made all the necessary arrangements and acquired visas, which were made available by the Algerian embassy last week. And now to the total under 20 African Cup of Nations, where Burkina Faso came from behind to beat the Central African Republic 3-1 at the Sheikh Aoud Bouhidia Stadium to increase their chances of making the quarterfinals. The win moves the Stallions of Burkina Faso to the summit of the Group B alongside Tunisia, who beat Namibia 2-0 in the day's first match. In the meantime, the 2020-2021 Total CAF Confederations Cup group stage draw will be conducted on Monday, the 22nd of February 2021 in Cairo, Egypt. The first leg of the additional second preliminary round took place on February 13th and 14th. The return leg is scheduled for this weekend. The aggregate winners from the last leg of preliminaries will qualify for the group stages. Apart from the title holders, RS Bakani of Morocco, who have already qualified for the group stage, there are 15 places to fill to complete the team quota for the four groups of four teams each. In basketball news, the second and final round of the AfroBasket qualifiers got underway in Tunisia and Cameroon this week, with Nigeria's senior men's national basketball team, the Tigers, becoming the first team to qualify for the 2021 FIBA AfroBasket Championship after beating Rwanda 64-51 on Thursday. It was a second loss for Rwanda at the ongoing Window 2 qualifiers in Monastery, Tunisia, and the fifth since the start of the qualifiers last November. And finally, in athletics, world marathon record holder Eliud Kipchoge of Kenya is set to participate in this year's Hamburg Marathon, slated for April the 11th. And that's it on Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good weekend. And that's it for this Friday, February 19th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I'm James Barton, Washington, wishing you a very good weekend.
On this week's Press Conference USA, host Carol Castiel speaks with Jennifer Kavanaugh, senior political scientist at the RAND Corporation, about the phenomenon of truth decay. A diminishing reliance on the facts and analysis in American public life, which threatens to undermine democracy. Listen to Press Conference USA this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.